The last area that is an outside influence, the three, is the national economy. And the national economy doesn't influence your ability to generate a maximum profit. And it's basically psychological. If you remember back to early 1980, we were having runaway inflation. We also had people spending too much, and the government tried to cut this back under the Carter administration. And what the government ended up doing is actually putting limits on the amount that you could borrow. They cut back the limits on the credit cards, trying to cut down this wild spending that we were doing in this country. And what happened is, as soon as the media started telling us, it was media-induced, the media came back and told us that things were not going well and that we were coming into recession. And within a few months, we started to believe that. And incidentally, the thing you have to realize when you're in business, you have to beware of reading the business page when they start to tell you this, because psychologically, you'll start to back off. I find in business myself, as soon as I have a recession, I don't read the paper anymore, or that section, I read the comic page, okay, which is probably the business page also. But the thing is, what we do in this area then is we go ahead, because you're going to find the easiest time to expand is normally during a recession. Why? Because everybody else psychologically and directly have backed off. Now, right now, we needed a point in time, because this happens to be an example that we had to fill out. We had to assume a level. At the level this was made, we had a level economy, which gave us a 0.00. If you happen to be out of time right now when you're listening to this tape and you're in a recession, you're going to have to use the recession number. And hopefully you're going to be in a period which our country enjoys most of the time, which is a growing economy, which is a 0.12. But at this time, in this example, we're using 0.00. It doesn't have a lot of influence, but it does have an influence to the extent that it's media-induced and the public is told that things aren't good and they don't buy. Again, when the media then starts to come back and the government tells us that things are good again, you're going to find that your business is going to do a lot better, generally. The next category, and one a lot of people don't think about, is one that drives a lot of people crazy, and it's turnover employees, because generally, the greater the turnover in the business, the more difficult it is to train, retrain, and to effectively manage your employees. And what we have in this example right here, if you want to find out what the turnover is, if you just, again, go to 5-6, left side, up about 5 or 6 inches, under employees, it says turnover once a year. And what it means is, looking at our sheet on 5-20, the average employee is on board how many years? 1 to 3 years. It's a 0.00. That's not bad. I'll use an example here. Hamill's T-shirts. You come into Hamill's T-shirts, and you're going to find we have a heck of a lot of turnover. In fact, we'll open at 9 o'clock in the mall in the morning. We'll close 5 or 6 o'clock at night. I have so much turnover that when I open at 9 o'clock in the morning, I will go into the business, T-shirts, at 10 o'clock with a handful of bills, talk to the employees and ask them, okay, you've all worked 1 hour. Who wants to work another hour and who wants to be paid off and quit? And you'll find every hour I'm hiring new people. In fact, our turnover is so bad in our T-shirt shops that by the time I hit 5 or 6 o'clock, if somebody has worked all day, for that day we'll give them a gold watch and we have a retirement dinner. There are certain businesses that look for turnover, and you're going to find a lot of the fast food chains will do this. And the large fast food chains, especially in hamburgers, actually hire people at the minimum wage or a little above, and they will have benefit programs set up, vacations, bonuses, raises, promotions. They come up in about 6 months. You'll find that they will have turnovers of 200 to 400%, and they enforce this because they have found it is easier to bring in new people and train them and train them than to give you the bonuses and the benefits and the promotions and the vacations that you should have coming. So what they do is you start to hit your fifth month or fifth and a half month. If you're not a person, they're moving up to assistant manager or one of the people they want to keep. What they're going to do then is quit scheduling hours or only schedule an hour a week to force you to quit, or they'll end up firing you. So they're looking for turnover in a lot of those businesses. That's how they keep their labor down. The local labor market. This could affect your labor costs and ability to hire and keep employees. Now, the thing you want to keep in mind here is what kind of labor market do we have right here? And the local labor market here says good supply of help. And what it means is, looking at number 16, when you have good supply of help, it means what? Little competition for employees, so it's a 0.00. Now, the thing you have to worry about is a thing called strong competition. Because you have strong competition for employees, you're going to find it's hard to keep people. You have to pay them more, which takes away from the value of the business. It also gives you one more problem. And if you've been in business before, you're going to find that one of the biggest problems you have, or the number one problem, are the employees. Because the people, those are the things that really drive you crazy as an owner of a business or as a manager. Now, the thing I want you to realize also in strong competition, suppose you happen to have a retail store and you're in a mall area. You're going to say, well, gosh, we're paying the minimum wage and there's 18% unemployed. You're going to say there has to be a lot of people available. That's not going to be true. Not necessarily true. Because you're going to find a lot of times when you're in an area, even though there's a lot of unemployed, the average regional mall is in a middle class or upper middle class area. And these people do not like to work for the minimum wage. And what you're going to find is the average mall will need 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 people to work there. And you're going to find that you end up going 5 or 10 miles away to get people to come to work there. And if you have a mall location, I would advise you don't pay the minimum wage. You find out what the average wage is on the mall and pay 10 or 15% more. If you don't do that, your employees will go out on break at 10 o'clock and not come back. You then have to go out at 10:30 and look for other employees strolling on the mall that you can hire. So what I'm saying is pay a little more and cut down your overhead, cut down your turnover. The next thing, labor union. Do we have a union here? Yes, we do. We have the Teamsters. And you're going to find the Teamsters, the competitors also have Teamsters, which is okay. Now, let me start to go through this now and see if I can do this properly. It says this is only a consideration if the company being considered has a union. Now, if you have the Teamsters, I think you're going to have to agree that they're strong. But the competitors belong, so it's a minus 0.45. It's not exactly minus 0.50, but I want to tell you something. My belief is that you should have a business that gives you as few business problems as possible. As soon as you start to have a union, although unions are something that's required in this country, I believe, for the balance, you're going to have to realize is, as soon as you have a union, they take away a lot of the rights that you have for hiring, firing, and running your company, and you're going to find it's almost like working for somebody else. You're also going to find, unless you're the owner on premises running it all the time, the union people are going to do a better job of getting additional benefits than your management is going to do of building up the company, and you're going to find that the union employee cost as a percentage of total sales, the percentage will go up every year. And you'll find that unless you increase your profits and do a good job, you're going to find that that extra money they're getting is going to come out of your bottom line net, and eventually you're going to be running the company just to employ your people. Now, as you know, the union thing goes back and forth. The pendulum swings back and forth. All I want to tell you is one thing. If you can find a business without a union, fine. That's one of the nicest things to own because you own your own company. But if you're in an area where you have unions, then learn to live with it. Because as long as you have other people that also have unions that have to pay the same rates and have the same problems, then you can compete because you're in the same marketplace. You're in the same problem area, and you can then compete effectively. What you have to worry about is when you have a union and your competitors don't. And I can tell you flat out, your chance of making it, again, becomes little, remote, and almost none. That's why we give you a minus 1.31. Again, a lot of you can argue with it. Again, I'm not trying to put down unionism. I'm just trying to tell you, you're going to have problems. And you're going to have problems that take away from the value of that business. And if I had a choice, what I do is I try to stay away from unions. I am too old now to have to sit down and fight the unions. But I do want you to realize, when you talk about the Teamsters, I was a member of the Teamsters years ago. I've been a member of many unions. When unions come to me and ask me why I seem to have an attitude that's anti-union, number one, part of it is I represent management, and the other part of it is, and I've mentioned this many times, my first union negotiation, the windows were knocked out of my little Chevy after I got out of school. I was negotiating with Little Steel. And when I drove back to my little apartment at that time many years ago, sitting on that broken glass with a wind and snow blowing into my face, I developed my union attitude that I have to this day. The other union negotiation I got involved in, they tore the top off my convertible. So I've had trouble with the unions. Again, I'd like to say some of my best friends are union members. But again, all it is the thing of we have unions and we have management. As you're going to find as you go through this program or get to know me or us, that we believe in treating the employees fairly. I don't care whether they're unions or not union. We, in this country, have to get back to the point where we do a better job with the employees and make them part of the team. Number of employees, number 18. The larger number of employees in relation to the net profit, the less valuable the business. More employees mean more problems, usually in direct proportion to the number. That's stupid. If you think that's stupid, this next sentence is so dumb. How dumb is it? It is so dumb that when we put this in the beginning, we were hysterical with laughter. But so many people complained about us taking it out that we have left it in or put it back in. And what the next sentence says, if you don't want to have many employee problems, don't buy a business with many employees. Can you imagine spending this much money for a tape program and having me say something as dumb as that? But that's what it is. If you don't want to have many employee problems, don't buy a business with a lot of employees. Because I want to tell you something. The more employees, it takes away from the value. My ideal company, I've told my wife this many times, is a company run by robots. And every time I tell my wife this, she says, Hamill, if you ever get one, they probably will attack you. In this business here, the number of employees we have is not unbearable. We have 15, which gives us a plus 0.07. But you're going to find the larger number of employees, the more problems you have. As a matter of fact, before we discuss restaurants, one of the biggest problems with restaurants is not competition. It isn't because it's that difficult. The main problem you have is, for the amount of profit you make in a business like a restaurant, you have many more people than you have in a lot of other businesses. I mean, there are many restaurants that make $50,000 net a year, and they have 50, 80 employees. You'll find many businesses out there that make $50,000 and only have two. Which do I like? Two. Or none. The next one, type of management. We're talking about a basic problem that a lot of people overlook when they're getting involved either selling or buying a business. As a matter of fact, most sellers lose sight of this, and then they wonder why they end up taking back their business. One of the reasons they end up taking back the business from the buyer is the fact that they didn't set the financing up right, and they strangled the buyer. The next big thing that we run into is the management problem that the seller leaves the buyer with, which they cannot solve. And let's go through this right now, because let's look at the management of the manufacturing. First of all, right here, management available. Again, going to 5-6, left side, up about 4 inches, 5 inches. It says management available. It says there's a manager. The manager will stay, and the manager's been on the job 7 years. So let's analyze that. It says, managed by the manager, and going to 522 on our pricing, it says the owner supervises the manager, and the manager's been there over 3, which is our example here. It's a plus 0.41. Even the manager under 3 years, because you have a manager, is a plus 0.27. A lot of the listeners to this tape right now that have not been involved in business, I'm sure now, are worried about the fact that when you go in to take over a company, you're not going to have any manager, the manager's going to leave. I just want to tell you something. While you're listening to the tape, think about that fantasy, because you're going to find out in the real world it doesn't happen very often. Small companies have as good management or better management than large companies have. Small companies have less turnover than large companies in management. And most small companies pay their management more than large companies. You're going to find in almost all areas, what is real is the opposite of what you've read, because it's the propaganda the big companies put out. And you're going to find small companies have better management, great people. Now, suppose we get to the point where we have one owner, the manager, and he or she is leaving. It has a value of only minus 0.03. You say, well, that's not too bad. You have to realize, when you only have one owner leaving or one manager leaving, you have one manager to replace, or you're going to replace that person. What is the chance of you doing it yourself or replacing that manager or owner with one person, statistically? One chance in what? Again, make up whatever number you want. That's not too bad. You can do that effectively. You have to replace one manager, an owner, get a manager, do it yourself. You're going to find you're going to do well. Where the problems come in and where the numbers become very negative, you look at your sheet, we have two owners are managers and are leaving, or two of your managers are leaving. Whatever it is, one owner and one manager. What it is you have two people that are directly in management working full-time and both leaving. I just want to say one thing. As soon as you start to get up to this level, you have a minus 0.52, which is what we're telling you. As soon as you go beyond one and go up to two, your chance of making it is little and remote. If you make the dumb mistake of buying a company or getting involved in a company where there's three people leaving in a smaller company, your chance of making it becomes none. In fact, statistically, the failure rate approaches a startup business somewhere between two people and three people leaving, which means you've gained nothing. In fact, one of the biggest things you're buying when you buy a company, in addition to the cash flow, is a continuity. And you're not going to have continuity of profit without the management people. You have to have them there. And what happens statistically? The chance of replacing one is 1 divided by so-and-so. 2 is 1 divided by so-and-so times 1 over so-and-so. And you're going to find that thing called the denominator, the thing below the line, gets very large with 2. And if you want to see a large number below the line, get up to 3. In fact, in most cases, when you get up to 3, your chance of doing it is either 1 in 100,000 or 1 in a million. Think about that. What I'm saying is, if you're the seller, I would suggest that if you and your two partners have been running this company and there's no other management, that what you do is start to phase out your different people. Start to bring in one or two managers and work out a program over a year or two to build in management and then sell it to a buyer. or stay long enough to crutch that buyer until you can be replaced. If you don't do that, the seller loses because you, the seller, end up having to take the business back and losing your investment and taking it back probably down the tubes. And you, the buyer, also end up losing also because you end up goofing up the company because you couldn't take care of that management problem. And you end up blaming yourself. And usually the financing and the management condition is something that is there when there's a change of management or a change of ownership. And what you have to do is make sure it's as close to being what you want as possible. So beware of too much of a change of management, because that's one of the key things that you're buying in a company. Cash flow, and the thing that generates that cash flow is that management team you have. The next category is ease of management. And we want to say there's a range of difficulty of management based on the amount of sales generated by direct effort of people. Since people are inconsistent, they're difficult to manage, and so people-intensive industries, such as service, are more difficult to manage. An equipment-intensive business with fewer people would be easier. In this one, we have manufacturing, plus 0.26. I'm sure those of you that own manufacturing companies think that your company is the toughest category to run. You just have never owned a service company. Because you're going to find that basically in a service company, you are earning all of your sales and profit by the direct effort of people. People are very inconsistent. As you get into retail, you have inconsistent people in a semi-consistent product. Makes it a little easier. When you get to manufacturing and you have machines manufactured, even though people are running the machines, there's fewer people involved. And you're going to find the management is a lot easier. Again, it's not that any of it's easy. It's only easy comparing one to another, that's all. So we have manufacturing, plus 0.26. Now, the years in operation. The national figures tell us that the longer a business lasts, the better chance it has for success. And what we have right here is, if you go back again to 5-6, we want to find out how long this business has been around. Not the industry. We already measured that. How long has the business been here? 22 years. And if you take 5-6 and go up to the left side of the sheet and come down about 3 inches, it says years present owner, 10 years. Years established, 22. So years in operation, over 20 years, 0.51. You're going to say, well, gosh, it's obviously had more than one owner. Let me tell you something. The longer the business has been around up to a point, the lower the failure rate, and the more owners. Because if this business has shown consistent growth through 3 or 4 owners over a 20-some-year period, that means it's almost indestructible. In other words, no matter how bad the buyer is, they're probably going to have a hard time trying to destroy the business. Not that they would. It's just that we're looking for the strongest transaction possible. We're looking for the best buyer and seller combination possible. In this case, since we're talking about pricing a business, I want you to realize we're talking about the things that make up the value. We're looking for strength there, looking for the good thing. The thing I also want to warn you on, as you start to get down below 5 years, you're getting in a danger area. My rule has always been, if it hasn't been around 5 years, I won't even look at it. Because if it's been around under 2 years or under a year, why are they selling? Why would they be moving that business on again? How much value does a business really have? It's been around X number of months, and even though it's showing $100,000 for its first year, is that going to be a good pattern? Are you buying it based on too high a value? I'd rather see a track record of at least 5 years. So you're going to find that I like over 5 years. Why? The failure rate starts to go down quite fast as soon as you get up to the 5-year period, over five. Now, the net profit, number 22. This takes into account the fact that the higher your net profit, the further you are above the break-even point. It's a proven fact that the higher profit businesses have a lower failure rate. And what I want you to realize is, yes, we could have built in a break-even point analysis to price the business. The problem is, instead of taking you 9 or 10 minutes to price a business, you would have found that it would have ended up taking you every time a half an hour, an hour longer. And we don't want that because we're trying to come up with a simple system that is also accurate. When you start to get involved in this thing called net profit, we're really talking about a simplified approach we've taken. I also want you to realize, since we have broad parameters here, I already mentioned in the beginning that these are straight-line equations. For those of you engineering types or MBA types that like to analyze the math, if you want to take a point halfway between or a quarter way between each value, feel free. It'll still be accurate mathematically. Now, in this case here, what we're talking about is basically, if you want to analyze it from an example, it's a ship riding in the water. And the ship is riding at different levels above the waterline. And you're going to find that the lower your ship rides in the water and the closer the waterline is to the side of your ship, the more waves are going to break over the side, the easier it is to swamp or sink your ship. And if you have a business that's making $20,000 or $30,000 here, the weighted value is very small because you're going to find, even though you're making a profit, you're going to find that as you have different problems in the economy or in your business or your category, industry, again, you don't have them just every few years when you have a recession or every X number of years when you have a depression. You're going to find in business you have problems every day, every hour, every minute. And what you have to do, the more money you have, the more storms you can weather, psychologically and also dollar-wise. As soon as you start to get up over $50,000, you're getting into a very good area, and you start to get into a safer area because very few waves break over the sides of those ships. And even when we have our major recessions, you're going to find the largest increase in failure rate is in startup businesses and in the mom and pops. Why? Because they cannot adjust to the inflation or the other problems that are having during that we're having during these recessionary periods. And what happens is the larger companies are increasing their prices to keep up to the inflation or keep ahead. The smaller companies, the break-even companies, the mom-and-pops and startups have a tendency not to do this, and what happens, they sink further behind, and we have a higher failure rate. Also, these companies don't have the money to weather these storms, which the larger ones do, above $50,000. In this business right here, we have a business that shows a profit. If again, what you're going to have to do is we have 510 in front of you. Turn it over, because on the front of 510, which is 5.9, we have a net profit. Now, what profit do we use in looking at this? We use the real net profit of $150,000, which gives us a value of what? 0.44. Do not use the value on number 4, because if you use the adjusted net profit in this area, you're going to be taking into consideration the return that you've built in on your different investments. So you have to take the real net profit or the money before you backed out the return or the interest rate, whatever you want to call it. Okay? So use the pure number of 150, or you'll end up having done the analysis twice, and you'll goof up your analysis. Okay, number 23, experience skills required. We're talking about another thing that a lot of people tend to overlook when they're analyzing a business, either to buy or sell it. And we're talking about the experience skills required to run this business. If you happen to be the person buying this business, you should either have these skills, or if you're going to build in management, you don't have to have these skills because you're going to end up doing what? You're going to manage the manager who has these skills. Just keep in mind, though, that the more skill required, the lower value the company has, because the more complicated it is, the higher the failure rate, A. The more complicated it is, the more difficult it is to hire people to run these companies or to administer these companies. Now, first of all, in this business right here, since we happen to have very few employees in a manufacturing company like 15, you're going to find that you don't have the specific people to do a lot of the functions, and the owner or the manager of this company is going to have these skills, engineering, bidding, blueprint reading, whatever it happens to be, they're going to have these skills. So we have some experience required of the owner. This is knowledge that you're going to pick up as you go on and become more knowledgeable in looking at businesses. So this is a minus 0.09. It's not material, but it's something you should consider. As you then start to get involved in manufacturing companies that have more people and have specific engineers to do different jobs, and you don't require a specific skill other than the management skill of running the company, you're going to find that little or no experience is required by the buyer and or the manager, whoever happens to be running the company. Why? Could be easily trained, or the business is large enough to include experts in all the areas. Now, keep in mind, a little or no experience area is the one we're talking about the owner or the manager wears loafers. In other words, they can't tie their own shoes. They wear loafers. They bang their head a lot. These are people that require a little no experience. The other thing, if you want to analyze this area and figure out what applies here, these are companies that tend to become franchises. Because if you're going to franchise something and sell it to people that don't have knowledge in that area, you're looking for something that requires a little no experience. It's sort of idiot-proof, loafer-type business. Okay, you don't have to have much knowledge. A lot of retail stores, as you're going to find in malls, they make $100,000, $200,000 a year profit, and they're run by teeny boppers. They're run by young kids that don't know from A to B. But even though these people are young, you're going to find they do a very good job, and these companies do very well. The other area we talk about is the extensive skills. And we have extensive industry skills required by the owner. That means it's very technical. It means that you have to hire a German rocket scientist. Or it means you have to have a restaurant and you have to have one expert chef. There's nothing wrong with having an expert chef or an expert German rocket scientist. It's just that it makes the business more complicated. It also means that you have another key man in there. In other words, I like to have 5 chefs. Or I like to have my chefs 14 years old. What I'm talking about is I don't want to have a person that's in a key position that's working for me that I have to kowtow to, because if that person leaves, I'm out of business, or the business is not going to run very well. So I like to have ones that have two or three, or I'd have to have, or the person running it would have to have the skill in addition. So we try to stay away from the ones where we have extensive skills required. Number 24, the owner support after the sale, is one of the things that a lot of people worry about. And by people, I'm talking about buyers. Very seldom do sellers worry about it as much as the buyers. And again, the buyer's always worried because the buyer's worried that unless the seller stays for 5 years, the chance of them making it is very small. And you're going to find the old saying goes, yesterday I couldn't spell owner, today I are one. And what that basically means is the buyer is very nervous going in. Within a week or two after they're in there, they understand the business, and they really don't like to have the seller around. So what we find is the amount of time and effort that the seller will give the buyer after the sale influences the ability of the buyer to succeed. The more support, up to a point, the more chance of success. And so what we try to do in a lot of these transactions is we have the seller stay around full time for X number of weeks, up to 40 hours. And then we have the owner stay around up to 30 hours a week, and then up to 20 hours a week. And we eventually phase them out so that we don't end up with this conflict between the former owner and the new owner. In this example here, the owner is willing to stay for a period of time, 3 months, which is over 4 weeks, so it's a plus 0.21. Again, that's a good example. We're trying to get them to stay. And although a lot of you that are not experienced in business think that you like to have the owner stay for a longer period of time, I want you to realize it doesn't happen very often. It's just because a buyer has hang-ups or a buyer has fear. And usually you're going to find as the average buyer that all you're asking the seller about is where's the light switch. But don't worry about it. Do not fear in asking the seller to stay. Why would the seller stay? There's no free lunch. In most cases, since the seller is carrying back financing, the seller really doesn't like to leave until they know the buyer can make those payments. No free lunch. The last one we have here is location. One of the most important assets in a business is location. And in this one, we have three different levels. And if you're looking at 5-6 in the upper right-hand corner, it says location class 1, 2, 3, a location class 3. And it's a rundown industrial park. Say, hey, it's terrible. It's crummy. Well, the thing is, even though you analyze it and find the location is not the best location, and when you come over to pricing, I want you to realize that it's still a level 2. It's the average location. It doesn't add to your profit, and it doesn't take away. Why? If you go down to the footnote, it said, please remember, use level 2 for businesses in which the location is not important to business, such as distributorship, manufacturing. Now, location may be important in manufacturing from the standpoint that you want to have railroad sidings or you want to have trucks, things like that. But generally, you don't have to have a beautiful area. You don't really have to care where you're located, because what you're going to find is the average consumer is not coming by your manufacturing plant. It's not like retail. You don't have to have the perfect location. So don't worry about it. You can go level 2. Now, there are exceptions. You may find in specialty industries like the electronics industry, or where you have shortage of labor and the employees insist on having 4 swimming pools, 6 hot meals at lunch, and all these other benefits, that you may find that the location is important. But generally in manufacturing, this is not the case. You can have an ugly building and have a beautiful profit, because that's what you're after. What we do now that we've gone through the 25 is we're going to do the thing that's probably the most difficult, is we're going to add these up. Now, you might do this as an example because we have left the plus and minus on page 510 blank. Now, we've circled all these coming up and down. What you have to do now is take all the pluses and add them up. Put the pluses on that line. Okay, we've left that blank for you. What you do then is add up all the minuses and put them on that line. Then subtract the minuses from the pluses. If you get 3.39, we'll give you an A. If you don't get that, what I suggest you do is do it over again. Now, for those of you that have those calculators, and these are the calculators without a tape, I would suggest you do it longhand, because what you're going to find is by doing it without a tape, you're going to make mistakes, which means sometimes you're going to overprice the business, which means you're going to goof up, and when you underprice it, you're going to irritate the seller if you happen to be the buyer. So what I'm saying is do go to a tape or do it longhand. Why? So you can find out what mistakes you make. So the answer is 3.39. And what we're saying here, basically, is we have come up with mathematically the fact that we are going to pay 3.39 years' earnings. That's all it says, 3.39 years' earnings. We've arrived at it mathematically. If you'll now turn the sheet over, 510 back to 59, you have now moved 3.39 up into that blank on the top under Section 5. It says Hamel business value equals total value plus weighted business value times adjusted net profit. Total value is $190,000. You plug in the weighted business value of 3.39. Now, what you do first is you multiply the weighted business value by what? The adjusted net profit. Once you multiply the weighted net business value of 3.39 times the 126.8, which is the adjusted net profit from above, you come up with value of what down below? $429,852. Now, what is that number? That is a number that we have assigned. That is the value of the goodwill. That is the value of the blue sky. That is the value of what you call we call the intangibles. Now, one thing we haven't talked about yet that I'd like to mention, what is blue sky? Well, if you happen to run into a company and the owner is asking for more than the assets and the company makes no money, that's blue sky. But if the owner is asking for some additional money above what the assets are worth, the hard assets like the equipment and the cash, some value above that, that's goodwill. That's real. That's what you're paying for the cash flow, the location, all these other things we just went through. Once you have these two, we have $190,000, which is the value of the hard value assets. The goodwill is worth $429,852. And again, that's a little more accuracy than we really have. We add the two together, and we come up to $619,852. But there's nothing wrong with rounding it off to $620,000. Okay? That's accurate enough. Now, supposing we get to this point and we find out the profit has been running $100,000. And that's what the sheet gave us up in Section 1 up here. Net profit of $100,000. We added the other things in. We had a real net profit of $150,000. That was for the year 1980X, as you'll recall. If you look back at your profit and loss statement on 5.3, you'll find that what we had was a profit and loss statement for the year December 31st, 1980X. Now, suppose instead of this being December 1980X, realistically, suppose this happens to be October or November of the next year, which means we've already priced it based on the last year. Can we now sit down with the owner, and the owner gives us the documentation that shows us that in addition to making $100,000 in last year, this company has gone up and it had additional profits, it's now making $100,000 more than it was last year. It was last year it made $100,000 net plus the $50,000 adjustment, which is $150,000. It's now making $100,000 more. Now, do you think the seller should or will sell the business based on last year? They're going to want to sell it based on this year. So what do? You have come up with a price of $619,852 or $620,000. All you have to do then, when an owner has an additional profit of $100,000 above what they showed, what you priced it on, is all you have to do is multiply the $100,000 times the 3.39. You see, we've already taken everything into consideration on the adjusted net profit. So all you have to do is add the $100,000, multiply it by the 3.39, which is the weighted business value, and that gives you what? It gives you the value of the additional profit that you have. So it's 3.39 times the additional profit, which you then would add to the $619,000. If it made another $100,000, that would kick up the value of the business and make it worth $900,000. You're going to find that we come very close, and you're going to find that this system works very well. Good luck.